Why, hello there, and welcome into this special edition of the Monday Scramble podcast. Guys, it's Tiger Woods' 41st birthday today.
Wow.
Happy birthday, Tiger.
What are we possibly going to get Tiger? Nothing, because he has everything. So let's just give him a 30-minute podcast where we break down all of his 14 major wins, analyze why he hasn't won one since, and maybe, just maybe, Rex, you're going to give him a slight glimmer of hope to get a 15th.
Give him his 15th major. Isn't that the best holiday gift we could give him? I mean, we kind of batted it around.
We want that most of all.
That isn't for us to give. That's for
him to earn.
Players are
for him to earn.
Lined up against it.
All right. Well, guys, let's get started. 1997 Masters. We're approaching the 20-year anniversary now as we turn our calendar towards 2017. Randy, you were at that major in 1997, the groundbreaking win for Tiger there. What still stands out? What still resonates about that performance?
How he shot 40 on the first nine and still got to 18 under. How Colin Montgomery came in on Saturday and was like, no one can beat this man. You know, he's invincible. And then just the coronation feel. And also how, you know, even the Augusta National staff, the waiters and busboys, were gathering around to see. It showed how historic and epic that was.
And you talk to players and caddies and coaches afterwards, and no one could put it in context. I mean, it was so hard. This just wasn't a win. This just wasn't a 12-stroke victory. This changes the way America viewed golf, in my opinion, because of everything, all the historical connotations that went into it. It was obviously a very special moment. The fact that he had been brought into the game with so much hype, hello world, you know, just a few years earlier, and he delivered on it that quickly on that stage, that's the amazing part to me.
Yeah, Rex, we contributed to that Tiger at 40 project that was on golfchannel.com last year, and I wrote a piece about how Tiger changed the game for TV viewers everywhere. And I talked to Lance Barrow, the producer of the CBS broadcast, has done so many Masters over the years. He said their directive to everyone on staff was do not take a camera off of Tiger that day, because they knew what was going to happen was going to change the game forever. They said if he's walking to the tee, you need to get it. If he is talking to his caddy, you need to get it. If he is holing out a putt and he's, you know, gesturing with his caddy afterward, you need to get that. I mean, it was, everyone knew that moment was seismic and it was going to change the game forever. Randy, when you're writing that story, what's the main takeaway?
It's too big.
Is it almost too big to write?
How do you catch
it? Lock up over the keyboard? Was there a little bit of shaking going on there?
Absolutely. It just seemed, you know, too large for anyone to write. But, to me, the coronation, that was the theme. And that's, you know, how it played out. Because he was so far ahead, it was like a parade at the end.
Yeah, 12 shots was the first of many blowout wins for Tiger's major.
Would you
career.
Pick that as his greatest major? I mean, just to dust it off?
Oh, I think the one with the broken leg was probably pretty good.
Oh, it's pretty good. 2000 Open was pretty good.
Winning by 15 shots at Pebble Beach is probably his best major. That's his best major performance, I should
that
say.
That one was even more demoralizing than the 12th shot at the Masters. Because the 12th shot at the Masters, that was his first. And, you know, it was Augusta National he got hot. But for him to do it in a U.S. Open, to be 12 under par, the first player to get to double digits under par when nobody else is under par, that was so demoralizing to the field. Players were dumbfounded and demoralized. That was the feeling you got there.
I just sent this quote because I had to go, you know, onto the old transcripts. And Ernie Els maybe had the best, the quintessential Tiger Woods just beat me up quote of all time. Someone asked him, Tiger just lapped the field and broke the record that was previously held by old Tom Morris. And Ernie took a moment and he kind of shook his head. And if old Tom Morris was alive today, Tiger would beat him by 80 strokes. I mean, it was just, you could see the level of aggravation and just disbelief. Are you really pitching this to me? Like, old Tom Morris never played Tiger Woods. No one has ever played Tiger Woods, not when he was playing that well.
Yeah, poor Ernie. He had so many.
How many majors would that guy have won?
He finished second at that one, and then he finished at the second at the very next one when Tiger beat him by 8 shots at it would have been 8 shots at St. Andrews.
That's why it's so entertaining now to hear the young players, Jordan Spieth and Rory, and all saying that, well, we really want Tiger back at his best. Do you?
No, you don't.
Do you?
Because there's a whole generation of players who were completely scarred by what he did to them, especially during the year 2000. I mean, say that Jack Nicklaus is the greatest golfer of all time, and I think that we would probably all agree with that. But no one played better than Tiger Woods during that 2000 season. It was the greatest golf we've ever seen.
His shadow at that time just stunted growth of players. You know, it's like they just wilted in his shadow. Butch Harmon, I talked to him about that and just how young players were affected by that. And when Tiger went through a scandal and injury, it allowed the sun to shine on some of these young guys to get some growth and some confidence
going. Like the picture.
2000's unbelievable. Ernie, because
all those guys.
For all the reasons you pointed out. You win by 15 at Pebble Beach. Look, I mean, you can say that there's other places maybe that are better for the Open. I would disagree with that. I think Pebble Beach is the U.S. Open's quintessential stop. And then to win the Open at St. Andrews the same year, to complete the single to complete the career Grand Slam, all of these
by
things.
Eight. He won by eight.
By eight.
That was a forgotten blowout.
That's 23 strokes that he, you know, lapped the field in back-to-back majors. That's pretty impressive.
Tiger was like Superman at the Masters and then winning by 15 at the U.S. Open and then winning by eight at the British. He was a Superman. But then, because of that, he had this kryptonite effect after that on so many other players where he didn't have to be Superman. They kind of, you know, he was their kryptonite. Everyone else was kryptonite. And we saw that. We saw players not being able to challenge it. I forget which Masters it was. I think it was the 02 Masters, maybe.
Yep.
Retief Goosen is teeing it up with Tiger, and everyone's thinking, oh, here's a guy. In the final pairing with Tiger, he's a grizzled veteran, a proven guy. He's going to give Tiger a run for it. Goosen hooked his tee shot at the first hole and was never a factor.
Folded
triple
like a
bogey
chair,
to hole. And, yeah.
Well, and you look at that, I mean, just to kind of walk it forward, you look at that 2002 Masters, and I mean, that was a turning point for a lot of different reasons. That's when Augusta decided they needed to Tiger-proof the golf course. And you could make the argument one way or the other that it worked. He's only won one green jacket since then. But it puts it in context of how influential he was. This golf course that had stood the test of time for so long, and the chairman sat in a golf cart and saw one of his drives and thought, that's it, we're ready. It's time to change the golf course, to change all this tradition for one guy. I mean, it's amazing when you think of the influence that had.
I mean, it's just a guessing game of how many Masters he would have won
had they not changed
the course. He still won four. Now there's talk of Bubba-proofing a golf course or extending some of the trees or doing a whole bunch of things, but Tiger's the one who's just like, oh my God.
Well, and it didn't make sense at the time.
You're devouring this golf course.
You and I both covered it. I mean, at the time, it just didn't add up in our minds that you're going to add yardage to a golf course. Doesn't that factor right in? Doesn't that make it easier for Tiger Woods? And maybe in a weird way, I mean, Tiger's really never spoken about this. I'd love to get his thoughts on it. Maybe it did Tiger-proof it. Because it didn't make sense at the time. At the time, you were thinking, well, he's one of the longest guys in the game. How in the world is that a penalty against him?
But if they're adding trees, that's where you can...
They added trees. They instituted, you know, whatever that second cut is called. I'm going to get that wrong.
Second cut.
The second cut. Yeah, I don't want to call it rough. I know that's not what you call it. But all of these things factored into that.
Guys, which one was the most memorable?
Memorable or exciting? Because I'm different on that.
Memorable. We can do exciting in a moment.
Okay.
Most memorable.
Memorable to me is one we talked about, the U.S. Open, where he won by 15. Because, you know, again, demoralized.
That's the one that you think of when you think of a Tiger winning a major.
Yeah, just total domination and demoralization.
I'm going to go the other way. As special as that was, I think 2008. I mean, he limped around. There was so much drama. You didn't know if he was going to show up on the first tee. You didn't know if he was going to make it through the whole round. You had this perfect foil in Rocco Mediate. I mean, they were just, this was Hollywood right here. And a Monday finish, those two going head-to-head. I worked for a weekly magazine at the time, and it was a nightmare having to deal with a Monday finish. But you were excited going back to that golf course. You didn't know what to expect from Tiger. And in retrospect, I don't think anyone even knew at the time how badly he was hurt.
You know what I remember about that, Rex, is at the end when Tiger won it, it was the first time I actually saw him where he looked like he surprised himself. Like, he didn't expect this. The way he looked at the trophy, the way he talked about it, he was, you know, Tiger, no one's surprised by Tiger winning a major. He was that day, as close to we've ever seen him being surprised by himself.
I'm going 2005 Masters. You talk about memorable moments, that 16th hole.
Chipping in.
That chip in.
The greatest thing about that chip in, and I was friends with a tour player at the time, and he had played Augusta quite a bit. His uncle was a member. His name was John Engler. And he found me during the award ceremony, and he had to come up and grab me and go, you know, the amazing thing about that chip on 15 isn't that he made it. It's that it was actually going to stop before it got to the hole. That's the amazing. You can't stop that. And I actually played the golf course the next day
And did you have that chip?
I manufactured that chip, and I did not hit. I mean, he's absolutely right. There's no way to get it anywhere close to that hole unless you hit the stick and it falls in.
Did you chip that into the bunker?
Not in the bunker, in the water. Yeah, I think I did that.
You chipped it in the water?
Well, yeah, because it catches that slope and goes straight down.
I thought it would have just tumbled into the water for you.
Into the bunker, you mean?
Into the bunker, sorry.
Yeah, somehow I skated the bunker and ended up wet.
All right, fine. So that was the most memorable, most exciting.
My most exciting is your most memorable.
Good.
That duel with Chris DeMarco. The Bob May duel was great and exciting, but the most exciting to me was the DeMarco, because DeMarco was in control of that. He led after the first and second round, and he led halfway through the third round, and there was that rain delay, and Tiger had just started making a move, and it had reverse effects. Tiger ended up making 7 consecutive birdies in the third round, but over 2 days. And he caught and passed DeMarco. But then on Sunday, DeMarco chased down Tiger rounds in the final round at the Masters and made a 10-foot putt at the last hole to force
Tiger
a playoff.
Did Tiger go bogey-bogey, 17 and 18, to drop into that playoff?
He might have, too, because he had a 3-shot lead going on to DeMarco into that. But I remember DeMarco just burying that clutch 10-foot par putt to put it in a playoff, and then Tiger birdies in the playoff. It was really exciting back and forth.
I'm going to go with the other Chris DeMarco duel at Royal Liverpool 2006 Open. And the reason it stands out to me was that golf course
was exciting.
Was so much fun. And look, this is from a golf nerd technical standpoint. It was Royal Yellow Brick Road. It was hard and it was fast and it was bouncy. And he hits one driver all week long and just dismantles the golf course.
Is that exciting?
That to me was exciting. The way he just wrapped his mind around the idea that, look, no, that's not the way I'm going to win. This is the way I've won basically all my other majors. I need to take a different route. And it showed just this different complexity of Tiger Woods. I remember talking with Hank Haney after the victory, and he talked about the game plan and how really brilliant it was. And not that they came up with the game plan, but that Tiger stuck to it, that he never deviated. He never felt like he had to press. It was just a work of art in my mind.
Yeah, if you look back at the history of Tiger's career, 2006 is a very underrated year. When you look at the number of his victories, the majors, the just overall dominating performance. 2000 gets talked about a lot. 2006 was right up there. Guys, we've already talked about the 2008 U.S. Open. Was there any sense in your mind, obviously he's going to be out for a while trying to repair his broken leg, any sense in your mind when you're covering that tournament that this is Tiger's last major win?
Absolutely not. It was just how quickly would he get to Jack's record, and then how quickly would he break it, and, you know, would he get to 20 or 21? Because,
was he 32 years old, I believe, when he won the 2008 U.S. Open?
Yes, so 32, yeah.
So no, there wasn't. There was nobody. Nobody could have seen what was coming.
If you could have put a number on it, how many would he have won when he left that U.S. Open Sunday?
I thought he was easily going to surpass Jack, and that he would get to, like, I would have said 20.
I remember sitting on the hill, you know, because they finished early that Monday, and we'd gotten done writing. I was with a few colleagues, and we were talking about this, and the fear that we had at that moment was not only was he going to catch Jack, but he was going to get to 19, 20, 21, whatever the number is, and he was going to get bored, and he was going to walk away. I mean, that's where our mindset was at that point, that at some point it's going to become too easy, and he's going to go look for somewhere else to go. Little did we know.
The Tiger's life was about to not be very boring at all.
It was going to change dramatically. And, I mean, the thing that gets you is, so at that point he's 13-0 with the 54-hole lead. That puts him at 13-0. He is Superman. As you said, with the 50
players are wilting when they're in his
no
presence.
No one could do it. And you could make the argument that if everything happened to him, it was Y.E. Yang.
Yeah.
Y.E. Fleck. Y.E. Yang, I had to get the name right for a second, who busted that streak of 54 straight majors. You have to wonder what kind of impact. I mean, because at that point, he was invincible. He's at the top of the mountain.
Yeah, right. And it is interesting when you look at Tiger's major championship runs, how it was the guys that you wouldn't have expected who stood up to him the most. Bob May?
Sean McKeel.
Yeah.
If you look at the record book, Sean McKeel went head-to-head with him twice at the PGA.
Rich
Lost
Beam?
Once, won once.
Rich Beam holding him off at Hazeltine when Tiger was making a run at him. Michael Campbell. Campbell won by 2, and Tiger bogeyed 2 of the last 3. Campbell holding off Tiger's presence on the leaderboard. What does that say?
What does that say that these underdogs, these under-the-radar guys, these guys who you would, on paper, would have absolutely no chance to stand up to Tiger, what does it say that they're the ones who are able to do it, and maybe not a Tiger, Ernie,
Says more about, you know, the failure of the biggest names in golf to challenge him on the biggest stages. you know, Ernie, there was a Masters where Ernie shot 75 and Vijay shot 76 when Tigers won. What was that one, like 01 or 0? I think that might have been 02.
Going deep there.
Yeah, but, you
Ernie's
know.
He's got so many stats here.
He does, this. Yeah.
But Vijay and Ernie and Phil, you know, none of those guys really really beating Tiger or doing what Yang and Rich Beam and
Michael. Well, not in a major. I mean, Ernie went head-to-head with him in Maui that year, right, in that epic duel, and, of course, at the President's Cup in darkness the year it was in South Africa. But you're right. We never got that. Phil, certainly. I mean, we never ended up with that Sunday showdown that everyone wanted. Now, a lot of that has to do with luck. Sometimes you just have to fall into these types of things. The chances that Tiger was always playing well, but one of these other guys was going to have one of those weeks is pretty slim, and it just never came to pass, whereas we've ended up with it a lot more so in recent years. And whatever combination you want to pick, whether it's
Jason Day,
Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, I mean, those guys seem to get the timing a little bit better. I don't know if that can fully explain it, though. There has to be something to the idea that Ernie Els has had an unbelievable career, but there is some serious scar tissue when it comes to Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I mean, these Bob Mays, these Y.E. Yangs,
nothing to
these
lose.
Sean McKeel, absolutely nothing to lose. These Phils and these Ernies and these VJs, they're worried about their legacy, where they're going to be placed among the all-time greats. Sean McKeel doesn't care about that.
Right.
He's just trying to win a golf tournament. He has absolutely nothing to lose in a play against Tiger.
Yeah, and I think the feeling from those big names that, you know, they've been here with Tiger before and they have to do something special and just pushing themselves too far.
Do your job.
Yeah.
Belichick, right? Just do your job. Ignore everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, and then the one, and I don't know where this falls in. It just dawned on me, having been in, you were in Tulsa, right? 2007 is the last PGA Championship there. That, to me, is, I give him the Marathon Man Award for that one. Look, it was a great victory, and what he did on the golf course was impressive. It was just scorching, blistering, just oppressively hot. And, I mean, he walked off the golf course every day completely drained. But yet, somehow, he showed up the next day. It's that physical advantage he seemed to have over the rest of the field that he just relished. And that, to me, is more so than any of his other victories, where he just stood taller than everyone else and let the heat beat down and let everyone else fade away. I mean, I remember finding Kenneth Faree, an Englishman, was playing his first round, and he made the turn and walked straight to the parking lot, got in his car, and went to drive away, and we ran up to catch him. And this is how hot it was. He rolled his window down and just drenched in sweat because I've never quit anything in my life, but I can't go on. I mean, it was just brutal, and Tiger Woods just relished that.
Yeah. And Tiger shot, he almost shot 62 there too, right?
That's as close as he came, yeah, that's right. And he was mad he missed that putt on the last green.
That's a great point, too, the physical advantage that he has, because he obviously does not have that any longer. So when you look back at why he's not the same player and why he hasn't won a major since 2008, you can pinpoint 2009 as a turning point in a lot of reasons. When you have the Y.E. Yang PGA Championship, you have Elon doing something to his Escalade, and you also have his body just completely breaking down, whether it's his neck, his knee, his elbow, his back. When you look back at why hasn't he won a major since 2008, what is the biggest culprit?
You know, I'll always remember two scenes of Tiger at Augusta National. One was before the scandal, and I remember we were all waiting for his arrival. We're standing behind the clubhouse at the big oak tree where he's going to come out the back door of the locker room and go to the putting green. And I remember a swarm of media and cameramen there. And I remember one, like two or three cameramen, Tiger came out, and they were backpedaling really fast. And Tiger's walking, and he's got that laser look. He's not looking at anybody. He's going to the putting green and, you know, get out of his way. And this cameraman is racing backwards, and he doesn't see a low-hanging branch from that oak tree. And just runs, backpedals into it really hard, just whack, he goes down face first.
Tiger didn't get a chuckle out of that. Usually he gets
Tiger did not take his eyes off. This was right in front of him. He did a little swerve move out of the way without breaking contact with where he was going. It was funny.
And then comes to mind.
So, you know, that's Tiger at his killer crusher best. But then I also remember Tiger, his first appearance in public on a golf course after the scandal.
Sunglasses and...
Oh, my God. It was like a different person. He looked He looked meek and timid. And I remember him making eye contact, actually, with people. People were shouting out things, autographs and whatever, where Tiger normally would totally ignore it. He was apologizing, saying, we're not allowed to sign autographs out here, but, you know, after the round. It was just a totally
different
Tiger. So
you're saying his scandal kind of blew up his aura of invincibility and
belief in himself human. And this advantage he had, that laser look of get out of my way, I'm going to crush you, when he came back at the Masters. And he did well in his return, you know, considering what he went through.
Sure.
But to see that something there was gone that he was going to have to get back.
I think it's a combination. I mean, I know we all always want to put our finger on one. And then Wright Thompson from ESPN wrote a great feature last year when he turned 40. And he kind of leaned toward the idea, twofold deal, that Y.E. Yang sort of stole something that Tiger had built up, winning, you know, getting those leads and not giving them up. There had been a toughness that had built up, and Y.E. sort of stole that, and that factored into it. And then losing his father, Earl Woods. I think he was a very driving force.
His North Star.
Yes, yeah. He was always the compass that always put him in the right category. And I think there's something to be said for that. Certainly injury factors into it. And then the fourth one that I felt like needs to be thrown in, there was a point when Tiger Woods left Butch Harmon, and then a decade later, Phil Mickelson starts working with Butch Harmon, and they have alluded to these tricks, to these mental advantages that Tiger would try to get on his competition, and, you know, when he's on the golf course. There is something to be said for that. I mean, if you look at Phil's head-to-head record with Tiger from the time that he started working with Butch forward, he was a much better player going against him. So there is some sort of mental tipping point that he reached, and things started to go downhill.
But for all the swing changes, for all the health concerns, for all the worries about the scandal, he probably should have won the 2013 Masters, at least through two rounds. He was in great position until that flagstick from hell intervened. So we've at least had an
bad
experience
draw,
here in 2013. Yeah. What? He was going to win that Masters.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't doubt that. I think we were all thinking the same thing, absolutely. And it kind of came apart, and we've seen it not so much.
6-hole lead at the 2012 U.S. Open, I believe, too.
But we've seen it. I mean, we're focused on majors here because this is what we're doing. But, I mean, I'll go back to the Wyndham Championship, the last time he was really in contention at a PGA Tour event through 54 holes. It looked like who was going to beat him, Scott Brown? No offense to Scott Brown, but, I mean, that's who you're paired with in the final round. Tiger's winning this tournament, and he doesn't get it done. I mean, so you can see it across the board. It's just not at majors.
Can he win another one?
Yes.
Can you expand on that, or
I was going to let my colleague go first, and then I'll go. It's fine.
I'm going to say yes, simply because, and you know, I was just reading a magazine article about his performance at the Hero World Challenge and how much optimism we should pull from that and how great it was. The finish was not great. Let's quit sugarcoating that. 15th out of a 17-player field is not a great finish.
Not good. Six double bogeys, not good.
Not good. More birdies than anyone in the field. More eagles than anyone
except
in the field.
Decky.
That's what you're going to look at, and you're going to be like, well, all right, there's something. The victory in that Hero World Challenge is that he was healthy. And that's always been the caveat, right? It's this huge asterisk hanging over everyone. If he's healthy, he can do X, Y, and Z. And I think Z is win a major.
That performance at the Hero was like abstract art to me. You know, you could see what you wanted in it, because for people who believe the end was already there, you saw that maybe it's not.
Maybe it's not.
Maybe it's not. But then, you know, you also saw the big challenges he still has, and that, you know, Tiger, nobody erased mistakes better than Tiger, and you just wonder if he can still erase mistakes the way that he used to.
It is bet in 17.
What's that?
Best bet in 17 to get that major, if it were to happen in 17.
Be Quail Hollow. Of course, he's got experience on. You could also make a case for Birkdale. You don't have to be perfect at the Open. You can get lucky with the draw. You don't have to putt great on those big flat greens. Maybe the wind dies down for him one round.
In Augusta. I mean, I know they tiger-proofed it, and I'm the one that brought up that stat that he's only won once there. But it's still, Augusta favors the older player with institutional knowledge.
Was he T21 just coming back from the Chip Yips in 2015? I mean, right. he still found his way around.
I mean, Aaron Hills at the U.S. Open is the only one I would discredit. Simply, it's going to be so long and such a physically demanding test.
Right. Augusta National, what course delivers more improbable magic moments than that? So,
Tiger at 41, Jack at 46. Which one of those are you taking?
Yeah, well, I would not be surprised if Tiger won there, just because you're right, the knowledge of the place and this belief that those guys come back that have won there, and they all believe that they can still win there. So that belief really serves them well at Augusta National.
Probably have to play Langer head-to-head on Sunday, or Fred Couples. I mean, it'll be one of those kind
Speed
of
deals. Is probably going to be there, too.
You would think so.
Yeah. So will he or won't he win a major? I never got your answer, Randy.
You know, I was one of the last ones to say that, you know, to think that it might be over for Tiger, because we saw so many, to be there and watch him win by 15 and 12, to see all the amazing
long
things, to win
time ago. 08.
But yeah, I think now, no, and it's likely no that he won't. But I won't be surprised if he does, but I think it's just highly unlikely now. And a big reason is just the competition around him is different. Beating these guys, yes. The cast of guys.
He just has to do it differently.
Up.
I mean, he talks about this all the time. MJ developed the fadeaway late in his career. Is he willing to stick with whatever his fadeaway is? And that might be playing a fade off the tee box to a much, much shorter drive.
It's got to be the strength of his game. It's got to be his irons.
It's got to be. He's always been the best long iron player. He's got to quit putting himself in the trees, though, in the rough. He can't play from there. He can't win from there anymore.
And where Tiger, where the best players not named Tiger of his generation weren't standing up to him in the majors. Now you look, these best players today are all standing up in the majors. You know, DJ, Spieth, Day, Rory, they're all putting themselves there in the majors now. So if Tiger's going to get one, the odds are one of those or two of those guys are going to be right there waiting for him.
Yeah, I'm a hard no as well, Rex. I know you think that he can and maybe even still Will won. His competition is
optimism
much greater than it's ever been.
They've
never these guys are rooting for him now. 15 years ago, his peers were not rooting for him. They're maybe rooting for him to get injured again so they could have 6 months of freedom and try and mop up as many titles as they want. But the competition is too great. And if we had Brandel Chambly on this podcast, he would tell you X, Y, and Z, the problems in his swing, which are going to lead to more injury questions. So until Tiger can put together
and everything is predicated
season,
on that
injury
issue.
Free,
if he is injury free and plays, let's figure it out. Let's say he's got 9 more years of truly competitive. I mean, that's 36 majors. You have to think at some point.
9 years is probably being generous.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Davis Love won when he was 51. Obviously, what Vijay Singh did into his 50s. I think it's possible if he's healthy. You always have to put that caveat on there, and that's a big if.
3 back surgeries, that's definitely a huge if. So we are not in agreement that Tiger's going to win one. Rex is being a homer, of course, but that's nothing to be.
You know, I would like to see him win one. I'd like to see him win three more because
it'd be the great story of his career.
Yeah, not only that, but you know, I just remember as a kid. Oh God, I'm dating myself now. When Hank Aaron was chasing Babe Ruth, that was the most thrilling, exciting thing to watch. The buzz around that, and I remember watching when he hit the homer. To tie Ruth, what a huge deal it was.
Sammy Sosa, Mark McGuire, sure. Right. I thought you were going to say old Tom Morris when you're dating yourself. Thanks for that.
But that, nice. I would love for golf to be in that situation again, because you talk about growing the game. There is nothing the USGA and the PGA could do like that kind of chase of Jack's record.
Here's my biggest concern with that, though, and this kind of gets off topic. I mean, we had a great year in golf. I mean, let's look at the champions. Let's look at the young major winners that are emerging that are compelling. They're fun to watch. They're powerful. They're very confident.
Tiger still hijacks all of them.
Tiger still hijacks the party. I mean, and look, for all the right reasons, and it's deservedly so, but it is something when you go down to the Hero World Challenge and people aren't talking to Jordan because they want to go see Tiger hit putts on the green. I mean, it's just amazing to me.
I think we can rule out a major for Tiger in 2017. Just real quick. Reasonable expectations for him in 2017.
Oh, I think he can win. I mean, if he's...
Can or will?
Don't know that he will. No, I'm not going to go that far. I mean, this is still...
He can, sure. He's capable of putting 4 good rounds.
Absolutely. And this is predicated on his health and his schedule. I mean, we're not exactly sure what he's going to do. Clearly, he's going to add Riviera and play the event there because it benefits his foundation. That, to me, could be a huge... He's going to show up there and realize that, wow, this is perfect for my game now, a lot like he did at the Wyndham Championship, that he needs to develop that fadeaway, and that might be playing a little bit different golf courses because he has always played the longest, most difficult golf courses, and I think he needs to start steering himself towards the Hilton Heads and the LAs in these courses where he probably has a better advantage.
I think he can when you look
can
at the...
Can or will?
Key distinction.
Yeah,
he can call me on it. I had to call you on it.
I say that he's not going to, but I think he can. But when you look at that, here's what's important. If he has a year like Phil where he doesn't win, but he's a factor in things, I think it's a huge lift for him still. But if he goes through another year where he's having yip problems rear their head, if he's not a factor in it, we've already heard him talk about how, you know, maybe he's resigned to that it is over. And you see his starting to prepare for life after
Phase
being
two.
A winner.
Phase two.
Exactly.
So TGR.
If he goes through a rough year, I think we have seen the end of Tiger winning. But if he can have even a Phil-like year of getting himself in position, I think it keeps that hunger and drive going.
Well, and if you needed a paradigm of hope, it's Phil Mickelson, right? I mean, just look at what Phil has done later
in
his
46.
Career. Absolutely. I mean, if he needs to look at someone and be like, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And those two have gone, I mean, that's been a interesting dynamic between those two for their entire career. So I think he can, and I'm gonna reverse my answer here. I think he will win in 2017, not necessarily a major. But I think he will win a PGA Tour event because I think he's going
to throw out a.
Started in LA. I mean, I think any of the.
He's going to win at Riviera. He hasn't played there in 20 years.
Well, you'd like to think he has a little bit different game. I mean, there's a reason why he didn't go back, since playing there 20 years ago. Gives himself the opportunities. Goes to the golf courses where he has the best opportunities. Yeah, I think he can and he will.
If he can win at Torrey with a. Broken leg, practically. Can he win there?
Torrey's going to be hard. I don't know that the South Course is the friendly confines. Like
that is a hard place to come.
It is. It's going to be a hard walk. It's going to be physically demanding. And, again, this goes to the guys that he's playing against.
Yeah.
I mean, Dustin Johnson's not blinking on that first tee.
How about at Bay Hill?
That's a hard golf course, too. I mean, it's tough to sit here and imagine that he would. Again, it'll be interesting what he does in his schedule, not so much through Augusta. I mean, I think that's going to be pretty straightforward, maybe an odd addition here
and
there.
Win the Players again.
He could win the Players, I think, given the right circumstances.
That's the perfect opportunity for him to show off his new game.
Wind's blown a little bit, and he's got to depend on his short game, wherever that's at, sure.
He's had the most wins at, what, Torrey, Arnie's Place, Bay Hill, and then also Akron.
Eight at Torrey, I think it is.
Yeah.
I think we can both agree, as we close out this podcast, that the tone surrounding Tiger Woods now as he enters year 41 is a lot different than when he was entering year 40. The uncertainty of whether he'd even be able to play again has certainly been put on the back burner, at least for now. That's the product of finishing 15th in a 17-man exhibition and tying the field most for birdies. So Tiger Woods, a lot to look forward to here as we enter year 41. We'll see him sometime in January. Ryan Lavner, Randall Mell, Rex Hoggard. This has been a Tiger Woods special edition Monday Scramble podcast. We'll see you next time.